Well, folks, welcome to another episode of Growing a Greener Kenai. Larry Opperman here. Happy to be here on this, as I always say, fantastic Central Kenai Peninsula Day. I hope everything's going all right for you guys. We haven't had the sun like we thought, but it's 54 right now, and there is a good chance we could get into the 60s today. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? It's going to be a little while, but they're calling potentially for the 60s on Sunday. Now, I think some of you folks that garden have noticed that we dipped down into the 30s. We got, at our house, we got really close to, we didn't get a frost, but we got close to frost. It was 34 at our house the other morning. And that's kind of one of those things. We're probably out of the zone of worrying about frost, but you know, in Alaska, it's always possible, regardless of the time of year. Well, we know the time of year in the winter, but through the summer, it's always possible. And I think you folks remember a number of years back where we had a frost in July, a pretty good frost in July, in fact. So anyway, it's looking pretty good out there. Get us a little bit of sun. I'll give you a quick marine forecast, and I like to give the marine forecast for any of you folks that aren't gardening. It might be ready to get out in the water. I like to call it the pukeability index. Seas are going to be 3 foot, 3 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot, and 4 foot next week. That has a pukeability index for me of probably about 5-4, maybe. I tend to get a little bit sick on the water, kind of depending. You never know. So yeah, I give them pukeability indexes. So anyway, I hope you folks are doing all right with your garden. I have to fully admit that I am way behind because, I won't belabor this, because I had some health problems. I went into what's called atrial flutter. I had to go to the emergency room. My wife and I have been fighting a virus, and I had to go to the emergency room and get the pads put on me and get zapped with a little electricity to get my heart back into normal. Now, I was awake, you know, it wasn't a heart attack type thing, but boy, I'll tell you what, I am so far behind on my garden. But the good thing about that is there's still plenty of time. This came about when I was planting my potatoes, and I couldn't work. Oh, man, I couldn't do anything longer than 30 seconds without sitting and resting. And my pulse was going up to 130, 140. Man, my atrium was just firing left and right. The doctor thinks the virus we were fighting might have had something to do with it. But anyway, went to the emergency room. They put the pads on me. They hit me with 50 joules and brought my heart rate back to normal, and I'm feeling pretty good. So hopefully, I'm going to take it easy, but hopefully I can get some more things done in my garden now, working slow and steady. And there again, like I said, I'm okay with that because we still have plenty of time. It is just now today, the 1st of June, and there is plenty of time to get things done. So anyway, if you have a question or a comment, you can email me at growingagreenerkenai@kdll.org. Or you can, it's easiest for me if you shoot me a text at 907-513-6169. And I can get that text if I can't get to the phone to answer the phone. So shoot me a text if you want to with any comments on what you're doing with your garden. Or, like I said, an email. Now, one of the things I want to do for you folks, and I will give an update on the show 2 weeks from now, and that is I'm going to set up, I've just been sick enough where I haven't gotten to it, I'm going to set up a Facebook page for Growing a Greener Kenai. And what I want to do is I want to start putting some recipes on there. When I mention something, you know, like a show here a while back, I mentioned how you can use cabbage water to do a quick little determination if your soil is acidic or basic. I want to start putting links on there that'll let you go, instead of searching for it, will let you go right to that and see how it's it's done. And I got that. I learned that from P. Allen Smith, you know, if you've ever watched any of his shows. So anyway, I'm going to be working on that the next couple of weeks. Start giving some recipes during the show and then posting those recipes on the Facebook page. And maybe we can get a little little social media thing going for Growing a Greener Kenai right on Facebook. It's you folks know by now, it's a popular way to pass along information, and hopefully folks will take advantage of that. So what's going on right now? You know, my wife sent me a text. She's running around today, and she wanted to double check. Well, the first farmer's market is today. You know, the one that's on the Kenai Spur Road at Coral Street, kind of across the street from the U-Haul, right by the Montessori, right by the school. Well, they're going right now. My wife said there's some starter plants there, and but it's apparently the first farmer's market going on right now at Coral and the Spur Highway. And after Growing a Greener Kenai, run on down there and see what's going on, see what some of the folks have for you, and get along there. It's boy, it's back. We're back to that stuff. And I also want to remind folks that a week from today at 10 a.m. at Kenai Peninsula College is the Central Peninsula Garden Club annual plant sale. And it's usually a pretty popular event. And there's always a line. Get there early, because if you don't get there early, you're not going to get anything. We were always usually shutting down the sale at least by noon, because 90% of everything is sold, but there's some great deals, and you can get all sorts of things. You know, you can get your veggie plants, herb plants. A lot of times there's bushes, trees. You just about name it, it should be at that plant sale. But anyway, that's a week from today, 10 a.m., that's June the 8th, at Kenai Peninsula College, and you'll see the signs for the Central Peninsula Garden Club, and you'll see their setup. It's one of the bigger fundraisers for the Garden Club every year. That and then our annual amendment sale, which ended yesterday with Kenai Feed. We want to thank Sarah and Rupert out at Kenai Feed for supporting the Garden Club and taking care of us with some of those items. Okay, well, what do we want to talk about a little bit today? Like I just told you, I don't want to belabor my health issues, but I'm a little behind. I've got, thankfully, I got my potatoes planted, but it took me forever to get them there because I couldn't breathe. I couldn't function. But I got that done. I've got some things in my greenhouse. I got my beans are starting to come up. And I just now, this week, feeling better, I'm hoping to get everything else out into the garden, and that is my broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, everything else out into the garden. I do have some lettuce and radishes going in different containers, but there again, that's the good thing about today is just now the 1st of June. We've got plenty of time. I've got plenty of time to get things in. In fact, I could plant some broccoli and in 30 days plant more broccoli. I mean, when you're looking at a 55 to 60 day rate of maturation, of maturing, there's plenty of time to get a second planting in. And we eat a lot of broccoli. We really like it. So anyway, I'll get that going this week. And hopefully get to feeling a little better, getting a little stronger, and get my garden going a little farther than it's not as far as it usually is right now. But like I said, plenty of time. So anyway, one of the things I want to bring up to folks today, folks, we're always talking about, pests in the garden, in the greenhouse. How do we take care of those? Some people are big on chemicals. Some people hate chemicals. So anyway, what I want to do is I want to give you a few recipes for some foliar sprays that are all natural, all organic, and let you, and if some of you folks have used some of these before, they've been around for a long time, and hopefully you'll think about using them. Now, in the past, when I lived in the Midwest, and I've got some right now, but it's been years since I've used it, I've also used some stuff called 7-Dust. It's always been pretty safe, and I've had good luck with it. That's at SEVEN, 7-Dust. And but I'm getting more into the organic trade, the non-chemical things. But so the first one I want to come up with a lot of folks use and talk about is the neem oil spray. So for neem oil, and you can get neem oil at any of our places here, the big box stores, our local feed stores. You can pick up some neem oil, or you can order it online. I like to buy local if at all possible and support our local business. But anyway, you take a tablespoon of neem oil, a tablespoon of a mild liquid soap like that Castile soap, or you know, a little bit of dishwashing detergent, and a quart of water. Mix all that up in your spray bottle. And I'm not sure what this is, but neem oil, I was reading this the other day, neem oil contains something called azadirachtin. And it apparently disrupts the life cycle of the pests by inhibiting their feeding, their molting, their mating, their egg laying, and all that stuff. It's effective against aphids, whiteflies, spider mites, and other caterpillars, I'm thinking cabbage moths and what have you. And the soap that you mix with that, with the oil, it helps it to stick to the plant leaves. So, but if you're dealing with aphids or you're dealing with, be sure you get underneath the leaves also with the spray. Because if you're just spraying the top, those little buggers will hide on the bottom side of the leaf. So, sometimes that's tough to do, but you know, some of the little hand pump sprayers you get, you can actually get a little hose that goes out from them, a little flexible hose, and point it straight up, and you can go all along the underside of your plants out in the garden or in the greenhouse, and it sprays straight up instead of you trying to lean over and the stuff that tries to go up the tube, it falls off. So getting a little flexible hose makes it a lot easier to get the underside of the leaves. And you need to, you know, same way with this, a lot of the other things, hit them every maybe 7 to 14 days when you're out there double checking your as you're out there checking your plants. And when we're talking aphids, you know, one of the things that really work a lot of people use is, this is purely natural, is the ladybugs. The ladybugs just love to eat the aphids, you know. So if you've got a greenhouse or a closed-in area, you know, I don't know if any of you folks, shoot me an email. I don't know if any of you folks have bought ladybugs to release out in the wild. They could just like, oh, I like these aphids at the neighbors better than yours, and they're gonna potentially fly off and bug out after you've spent the money on them. So then the next one I wanted to talk about is what's called garlic and chili spray. Now, I've made this before, and it seems to work. You take a bulb of garlic, one or two hot chili peppers, again, a teaspoon of a mild liquid soap, and a quart of water. And what you do is you put everything in the water and the soap, and you let it sit for maybe a day or two. And what I like to do, I don't like to do it that way, though. What I've done is I put the garlic, the peppers, and the water in a blender. And you blend it all up, and then you strain that, you know, strain it if you don't have cheesecloth, or you know, use an old linen towel or a couple layers of paper towels or a coffee filter or something, and get the solids out of there. Then put that in your spray bottle, in the water, put it all in, and then add your soap, mix it up, and that emulsifies everything and sprays it out. So, but the garlic contains sulfur, and the sulfur acts as a natural fungicide and insect repellent. The chili peppers, we all know, contain capsaicin, which deters a lot of insects, which is what's in bear spray. This combination, it works well for aphids, beetles, fungal diseases like powdery mildew. So anyway, there again, blend the garlic, everything with water, strain. Spray on the plants every few days or after a rain if you're using them outside. So a lot of these things get washed off in the rain. You're going to have to reapply them after things dry up a little bit. Another one that's a real easy to make. And if you look, with the exception of just a few things, the neem oil, everything is pretty much, it's kind of off the shelf that you might have in your house already, especially if you're a gardener. Anyway, another one, good one, is baking soda spray. You can take a tablespoon of baking soda, a tablespoon of vegetable oil, a teaspoon of a mild liquid soap, and a gallon of water. And you mix all that good stuff up. Make sure it's going to, there shouldn't be anything in there. It's going to clog up your sprayer. But the way it works is the baking soda actually alters the pH of the leaf surface. And it makes it an inhospitable environment for fungi, such as powdery mildew and any other fungi that might be in there. So when you're putting oil in here all the time, the oil is what helps the mixture stick to the leaves. And the soap acts as that emulsifier. So for the baking soda spray, you mix all the ingredients and spray on the affected plants once a week or there again after a rain. And before you just flat out spray this on all your plants, do a little test spot first. Test on a small plant of one plant first and make sure that it's going to be okay and make sure it's not going to, you know, one of the things that can happen, especially in some bright sun, is some of these things can cause a little bit of leaf burn. And you don't want that to happen. So it's just like whenever you read some of the stuff with cleaners and stuff, they always recommend instead of spraying the whole thing down, do a little test part of your fabric first. Well, it's the same way with plants. Do a little test on your plant first to ensure the plant's going to be okay with what you've done. And if that one little test area, or do a full plant as that test before you use it everywhere and make sure it's going to be okay. And then another one, and I've never done this one, but it sure seems to make sense, and that's a milk spray. You'd use one part milk and two parts water, you know, so a third of a gallon of milk and two-thirds of a gallon of water. And milk itself has antifungal properties, particularly against powdery mildew. The proteins in milk, I'm going to read this right here. I've read all this stuff and I've studied it, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But it says here the proteins in milk create a protective film on leaves that prevent fungal spores from germinating, which kind of makes sense, you know. So mix the milk and the water, and same way, spray every 7 to 14 days or after a rain, and use in the fairly early morning, and the same way, do a test to make sure you don't get leaf burn from the sun. Make sure everything's going to work right. And here's one we've all made, compost tea. We've all made compost tea, whether you're watering with it or whatever. But this is doing a compost tea for a foliar spray. So we've all made compost tea. You make compost tea and it gets those beneficial microorganisms to plants. And they outcompete and inhibit the harmful pathogens like fungal diseases. And it also gives plants a boost of nutrients. So do your compost tea, however you like to make yours, strain it, and put it in your sprayer and spray on your plants every 2 to 4 weeks. And those plants will actually get the benefit into the leaves of the compost. But that's a real easy one that we all have at our house is compost. We're all making compost all the time. So then one of the things that we make that works well too is an Epsom salt spray. Epsom salt spray. Get that out of there three times fast. Tablespoon of Epsom salts in a gallon of water. And Epsom salts are high in magnesium, and then they also have a little bit of sulfur in there. So they've got magnesium sulfate, and what that does is provides those nutrients directly to the leaves of your plant. It improves the plant health and stress tolerance. It's really good for plants that have a magnesium deficiency, and that's one of those things. It's not going to hurt your plants at all. Don't do a giant, you know, like I said, a tablespoon in a gallon is all you need. That's one of the mistakes a lot of folks need. They think if a tablespoon works well, then two tablespoons will work better. That's not necessarily the case. You have got to keep some of these items on a good, lighter mix and be extra careful to follow direction. In fact, with some of the, and I'm going to talk about it here in a little bit, with some of the fertilizers, some of the recommendations, and I've done this, is you make a half mix. You know, if you're using a particular fertilizer that dissolves in water, do a half mix for your plants early. But one of the key uses for the Epsom salt spray is consistency. You need to be regular on applying this to your plants. Don't just do it once and then ignore your plants. Get them on a regular schedule. If you do it once a week seems to help, that's fine. And then the timing. All these things that I'm telling you, almost everything, all the recommendations I've ever learned and seen, is to apply these sprays early in the morning or late in the evening to avoid leaf burn and maximize absorption. And most of us know what leaf burn is. That's when, you get that stuff on your plants and the sun beats down on them and it can actually burn your plants. But the Epsom salt spray is also one that needs good coverage, especially on the undersides of the leaves. Always make sure you get the undersides of the leaves on any of these pest items or fungicide items. And same way, always test a little area of your plant first and make sure that the plant's going to be okay with that. So we've talked about all these sprays. Now, another one that is good for general plant health is a seaweed spray. And if you get a cup of seaweed extract, and for instance, in a gallon of water, you mix them all together, put them in a spray bottle, and spray on your plants every couple of weeks. It's just good for general plant health, and it fights off various pests and diseases. And then the last one is, you know, there are some agricultural soaps like that Castile soap. A tablespoon of Castile soap in a quart of water. Put in a spray bottle and apply it to your plants. And most of these organic foliar sprays, they're easy to make and they're easy to use. And they're a good, safe, effective way to help protect your plants. You know, one of the things that's tough is that we all work really hard, really hard in our gardens. And we spend this time and this effort. And then sometimes we don't do the simple things that make our gardens successful. I know I have fought aphids before. I've only had aphids in my greenhouse twice in about the last 12 or 13 years. And there's a few things I won't grow in the greenhouse anymore because they seem to be aphid magnets. And, you know, part of it might have been, too, where I got my starter plants from. I might have gotten some starter plants that already had aphids or aphid eggs in there, and those are what got me. For instance, I'd have to really know where I was getting some of my starter plants from, like eggplant, before I put eggplant in my greenhouse again. Some of you folks may have never had any trouble with it, but I'll tell you what, the times I've tried to grow eggplant, man, the aphids just are attracted to eggplant deluxe. So I'm usually pretty careful about that. But it's And there again, like I said, I'm betting I got the last couple times, I'm betting I got bad starts that were infected with aphids. And I don't remember, in fact, where I, in fact, got those starts, because I remember not starting them at all. So what can we be working out in the garden right now as far as getting ready, you know, for our zone 4, we're zone 4 A and B in this area, and you know, the hardiness zone, they've kind of changed our areas a little bit. We got a few areas that have apparently warmed up according to the USDA hardiness zone map. But right now, there's time to get some of your plants in the ground. For instance, your marigolds, some zinnias, petunias. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about petunias after the break. Impatiens, snapdragons, cosmos, geraniums, alyssum. And our plants, we've still got some of them in the garage, pulling them in and out with the weather. There again, like I said, I haven't been much help to the wife on that, but they're doing just fine. And boy, we'll get them out there. And one of the things I'm doing too is, you know, some of my petunias, I'm getting ready to actually do some cuttings off of them, put a little rooting compound on them, and get those things and start propagating a few of them. You know, some of the petunias, especially the night sky petunias, you know, those are actually copyrighted. And unless things have changed the last couple of years, it's actually illegal for a nursery, from what I understand. I'd have to double check this again. Maybe I'll check with Darren at Trinity, to actually propagate their own night sky petunias. And you know, those are the ones that have the white speckles on them, and they come in pink and blue and black, dark red, and they're really beautiful. But from what I understand, those things are copyrighted, and you have got to purchase those. You cannot propagate those. So I don't know. I'll see what I can find out on that, and let you know on the next show. But I'm getting ready to. Now, if you're going to propagate them for yourself, that's just fine. So that's what I've done over the years. I get a couple of nice petunia plants, and then I let them grow a little bit, and then I start doing clippings off of them, dip them in, like I said, that rooting compound, put them in a warm, humid condition, and they start to make some roots, and then they're good to go. And then some perennials this year. A lot of folks say to obviously plant your perennials later on in the summer or the fall. I don't know. I've done it a couple of different ways, but planting them in June, they can let them establish before winter, like some of your hostas, daylilies, black-eyed Susans, your peonies. All our peonies are coming up just fine right now. And I thought at first I might have mulched them a little deep for the winter, but I pulled the mulch off of them, and they are doing just fine. They're doing just fine. They're coming up well. And hopefully maybe here coming up this summer, we can get Wayne and Patty Floyd on talking peonies and gardening. They're some fantastic growers at Cool Cash Farms. So anyway, but some tips for planting in June. As we all know this, your soil prep, make sure your soil is well draining and rich with some organic matter. Newly planted annuals and perennials, they need a regular watering to establish roots. Use a little mulching and use a good balanced fertilizer to promote their health and that. So anyway, if folks do or don't like organic foliar sprays or chemical sprays, it just depends on what you like. Like I said, I've used 7-Dust a lot over the years, and it has always worked for me. And if I remember from the directions, it says to, you know, wait 24 hours before you're going to eat the food if you've sprinkled some 7 on. But I've only used it like once or twice up here in the last 30 years. Used the tar out of it back in the Midwest in central Missouri for gardening. So anyway, I tend to lean toward, I do the neem oil, and I've done the neem oil quite a bit, and that seems to work for me. But any one of those that I was talking about would be a good thing to try for you, depending on what your problem is. You know, if it's just powdery mildew, then a little bit of the baking soda or milk spray will work just fine for you. And that's, there again, like we said, that's mainly it's altering the pH of the plant that makes it unattractive for that fungi to grow. So anyway, we were talking about a little bit about petunias, and, you know, there's petunias actually, I grow them in hanging baskets, and my wife and I both love those night sky petunias. They're just fantastic, and as I told you, but any petunias are just wonderful. They just produce massive amounts of the bright funnel-shaped blooms, and there's so many range of colors. They're just gorgeous, and you know what's really amazing is just two or three plants in a big hanging basket, and it looks like there's 20 plants in there. When you do it right, it just fills the basket up, overflowing with your petunias, and they're just gorgeous. But one of the big issues that a lot of gardeners face with petunias, it's getting the plants to stay flowering really strong through the summer and into the fall. Now, one of the things that also helps with that, besides, and we're going to talk about fertilizing, is to deadhead them. You know, when the flower starts to kind of curl in, dry out, you need to get that old flower off there and let the plant start using its energy to make new plants. And one of the things I did a few years ago, and I do this each year now, is when I can potentially have through the summer, getting into the summer, and maybe in August or so, I just took my petunia baskets and I gave them a haircut. I didn't just give them a haircut. I gave them a flat top. I had these big, beautiful plants. Well, they were starting to look like they were kind of starting to peter out a little bit. And I just took them, and there again, like I said, I gave them a haircut, a flat top. I took every single plant down to maybe 2 inches tall in the basket. And then I put a good fertilizer on them, about half strength. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't very long where I had the biggest, most beautiful baskets again. They came back with a vengeance, and it worked wonderful. But they're so nice, but they sometimes show early signs of wear and tear as they start to age, and that's why I whacked them off, like I said, flat top all the way down, like I said, just a couple of inches of plant material sticking up out of the soil, and like I said, they came back with a vengeance. So a lot of times, though, it's not the issue isn't with the plant or disease. It's when they start to slow their blooming. You can usually simple lack of available energy of nutrients in the soil. So they need a lot of nutrients to power all those bright, colorful blooms, folks. And they can deplete even the best potting soil. And once that stuff's gone, it doesn't take long for the foliage and the pretty blooms. They will begin to suffer, and you can tell when it's time to help that plant out. There again, like I said, flat topping it down, giving it a little fertilizer, and boy, it did wonderful. But to get them to stay strong, healthy, and continue to flower big, it's feeding your plants the right mix of nutrients for blooming and not just to green them up. So you can use simply providing your plants with the right dose and type of fertilizer on a consistent basis through the growing season. You can keep your petunias thriving. Now, one of the things I use is, I'll go ahead and say the brand, you know, the Miracle-Gro stuff, or even other brands. There's all sorts of brands out there, but I keep 4 55-gallon barrels painted black in my greenhouse as kind of a heat sink. The sun beats down on them, it warms that water up. But I keep one barrel that I've got a plastic trash bag in, and that is clean water. And what that does is I let that sit in that barrel. The sun warms that water up because we're on well water, and it keeps me from watering my plants in the greenhouse with that freezing cold water. And that's what I so what I do is I take that's a 55-gallon barrel. Well, with the Miracle-Gro, you're supposed to put one scoop per gallon in. So what I'll do is in that I fill that barrel up, and I'll put like 50 scoops in, and I make a mix of Miracle-Gro in a 55-gallon barrel, and then I've just got to dip it. And then when the barrel gets about half full, I'll fill it up again and maybe put another 20 or 25 scoops in. And then I've got a mix again. I don't necessarily mix it 100%, but I'm mixing it 90%. And then I've got warm water. And I do this. I fill it up again after I'm done watering the greenhouse. And then I fill it up, and then it gives that thing time to warm up again. And I use the plastic trash bag. I use two of them, the big 55-gallon giant trash bags. And I use that just to protect the water, because if you don't, the inside of your barrel, the rust that's in there, and the rust isn't probably going to hurt anything, but it clogs up your water, my watering can. And, you know, plants always, ground can use a little iron, which is the rust getting in there. But I've got the plastic trash bags in there is to keep the water clean and keep the rust from floating in the water and discoloring it. So anyway, I mix that up, and then I've always got something where I can just scoop it out and water everything. And it works. It actually works wonderful. So anyway, there's just a couple secrets to keep them your petunias blooming, and they're really a pretty easy plant to grow. But one of the things you don't want to do, and this is where I've said before, I mix a partial one, is you don't want to give your petunias or any other of your plants too much power all at once. That's one of the troubles that some folks seem to have is there again, like I said, if the directions say to put a tablespoon in, well, then two tablespoons has to be better. That's not necessarily the case. So when flowers and vegetables, they get too much energy, it can make them change their growth pattern. You know, so what you can cause sometimes is instead of using the energy they've got to produce more flowers and vegetables, they just use that energy to grow bigger, you know, especially if you're using a mix that's got a little bit more nitrogen in it, you're going to grow greener, you know. And then likewise, if they get too little energy or there's a too big a delay between feedings, and this is why consistency is one of the keys, they'll also maybe slow down or stop blooming. So it's important to supply them with a consistent but low dose of energy. So what I'm going to do, if I'm going to use my Miracle-Gro and I've got it in the barrel, I'm going to put it in my watering can and maybe only fill the watering can up 3/4 full with it and then top it off with regular water. And what that does is that gives a little less than a full feeding, but it gives them a little thing. It gives them a little bit of feeding. And that helps in every way, and that's worked for me over the years. And I don't know if it's worked for you, but it's worked for me for many years of doing this, and I've done this with other plants too. Is my some of my vegetables and everything, I give them the mix in water that dissolves in water. But it's rare for me to give them a full batch, a full concentration of what the directions say. I almost always cut it a little bit. But you know, one of the best things you can do for your petunias and a lot of your plants is worm castings. Worm castings are they're magic. And you heard me, I had Michael Hicks from Grandpa's Worms on the show here a while back. And one of the things you can do is maybe about once a month, worm castings, they're a natural fertilizer. They're good for steady growth, and they keep foliage strong. But what you do is about every month or so, take a quarter to a half a cup of those worm castings and spread them around on the top of the soil of your plants. Like I said, you can do it with vegetables. You can do it with your petunias, with flowers. And then each time you water or it rains, those plants get that little slow dose of nutrients that trickle down to their roots. It's really a perfect way to give your plants a lot of the power they need. And that's one of the things we talked about before, too, is while there's nothing wrong with putting some nutrients down into the soil, one of the things you want to be careful of is if you're planting something and you've got all the fertilizer down underneath the plant, when you water, a lot of that fertilizer is going to actually wash deeper into the soil away from the plant roots. Now, I've done it, you know, when I plant my tomatoes, I put a little, about a little handful of worm castings into the soil, and I mix it up in there when I set my tomato down in there. That's fine, but that's one of the things to be really careful of is making sure that you're not running the fertilizer away from the plant, that it's going to be up there close to the plant, close to the roots, and your plant will do a lot better. So anyway, what kind of fertilizer would you need if you're going to use a dissolving or spread fertilizer on there? And we've talked about, and I'm going to repeat myself again, the fertilizer NPK. It's always, for those folks that don't know, when you see a bag of fertilizer or anything and it has three numbers on it, like 10, 10, 10, 8, 32, 16, that is, and always in this order, worldwide, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. So that is always that way, no matter where you are in the world. And the number means the percent. If you've got a 10-pound bag of fertilizer that says 10, 10, 10, 10% by weight of that bag. So 1 pound in that bag is nitrogen, 1 pound is phosphorus, and 1 pound is potassium. Everything else is just and pretty much an inert filler. So that's to reiterate, I always almost always bring up what NPK is, because there's still folks they don't understand what it is, and I always like to remind folks of that. So anyway, liquid fertilizing, though, once it's done properly, those constituents of the fertilizer, they're pretty much ready for uptake by the plant. It allows the plant to use the power literally almost immediately. And some of the liquid fertilizer, and there again, like I said, you fertilize around the plant and let the stuff soak down to the roots, not away from the roots. So what kind of fertilizer would you want to use? You know, some of the fertilizers are pretty high in the P, NPK, the phosphorus. And I've got some of that. And I'll tell you what, as a little side shoot, you know, like for instance, there's some fertilizers like called the Blossom Booster that's 10-30-20. So it's 30% phosphorus. There's others that are literally like 10-55. 8-55-10, you know, which means it's 55% phosphorus. Flowering, blooming plants love phosphorus, but it's, you know, they need some nitrogen for growing their stems and foliage, but it's phosphorus and potassium that really power blooms. And one of the things I'm going to do this year is I did a little, folks know how much I love to grow potatoes. I did a little research, and some of the potato fertilizers that the commercial guys use, they're using like a 0.460. So what I'm going to do is once my potatoes break the ground surface and they've popped up, I'm going to do a liquid, probably about 75% mix of this 10 or 855-10 fertilizer that's for flowers. But I'm going to do it on my potatoes, because potatoes apparently love phosphorus. I've never done it before, so it'll be an experiment. We'll see. We'll have to see how that goes and see how that works. So, but there again, once you have your fertilizer, most recommendations starting out is to dilute it to one half of the recommended dose. So by weakening that solution, you keep the plant from getting too many nutrients all at once. And this allows you to give the plants a dose more often to keep a steady supply of energy. So there again, that's what I mean by consistency in making sure your plants are ready to go. So every, you know, if you like to water once a week, you know, most greenhouses, in a greenhouse, you can get on a fairly good watering schedule that stays pretty consistent. It's a little bit different outdoors, obviously, with rain and that stuff. But using a half strength every 7 to 10 days, your petunias will thank you with their blooms, and you'll have good looking tomatoes, petunias, and flowers all summer long. And speaking of that, you know, it probably will help your tomatoes too. It pretty much helps everything. So, but one of the things too is remember to deadhead them, and as the flowers die off, because it lets the energy of the plant go into more blooms. And we all pretty much know how to deadhead a plant. So I hope that helped you with petunias. And then I want to close today with one quick little thing on getting rid of weeds in the garden. We've all fought weeds, and we fight them even in the greenhouse. But one of the things you can get, we've seen some of these natural recipes for getting rid of weeds using vinegar. Well, most vinegar at the grocery store that you get, that's typically about regular white vinegar. It's typically 5%. And that works, except you almost use it cut maybe half, but that's like 5%. And that's 5% is 5,000 parts per million. Well, anyway, you can buy horticultural vinegar. And I've checked, all our local stores here sell it. I'm not sure about our big box stores, but all our local feed stores, they do sell it. But a lot of that stuff you can get anywhere from 20 to like 45% vinegar, 20 to 45%. And what that does is sometimes it looks like it's a little expensive, but for instance, you can get like the 45% stuff, 2 gallons of that, maybe $35, but it'll dilute to like 18 gallons, you know. So in the long run, that's less expensive than just using straight 5% right off the shelf food vinegar, you know. So you'd have to figure the cost and how often you're gonna use it. But yeah, there's a lot of different variety, a lot of different percentages you can buy, and then there again, you can read the directions. But you can still use that 5% store bought vinegar. But you know, when you're looking at spraying driveways or walkways or path, you aim for a vinegar with an acidity in the range of at least 30%, and it'll be labeled as horticultural, and it lets you mix it up more. And you know, I'll tell you what, I'll try to remember here in the next couple of weeks to do a cost benefit analysis of using some of this horticultural vinegar as opposed to just vinegar off the shelf. You know, two you know, and it, I think a lot of it would depend on how much you actually have to spray to, where, how many weeds you want to get rid of. But everything I've read, and I've used vinegar before, but it's always been vinegar from the grocery store, the actually food grade vinegar, the 5%. But, and then if you want to, when you do add a few drops of, or you put your vinegar into a sprayer, you can add a couple drops of liquid dish soap too. And that, that helps it stay on the plant too, a little bit. So helps emulsify, make sure everything's going to go. But the little hand pump sprayers, you know, you can put them in, use a backpack sprayer, you can use whatever. But yeah, vinegar works well to kill weeds. And you know what else really works well to kill weeds? It's a lot of work, and you got to carry it. But boiling water helps to kill weeds. And I found that out accidentally when I was boiling some water, making some corn outside, cooking up a bunch of corn. And I dumped the water somewhere. Well, it killed everything. So I've tried also using just boiling water, but that, trust me, that's a little bit of extra work to do that. So anyway, if it's a decent sunny day and you're working on doing your vinegar mix, as long as it's not raining and washing it off the plant, usually within 24 hours, you're going to see the weeds start to wilt and die back. So you've got a 100% safe item. And all these things we talked about today, disregarding the talking about fertilizing petunias, but the vinegar, the organic foliar sprays and everything, that's also pretty safe if you've got little ones around, or pets that are around. Maybe you like to let your chickens go through your garden, or some ducks go through the garden or whatever, and it's a little bit safer for them. I would be reluctant to use any chemical at all if I had little ones, grandkids, or if I had little ones hanging around, or animals, the dog, or like I said, some ducks or anything like that hanging around. So there's ways to take care of all these things in a good, safe manner. Follow some of the directions, what I told you. Check out that horticultural vinegar. Check out some of those fertilizers for your petunias. Like I said, do a half strength. And, boy, I'll tell you what, your petunias will be happy. They'll like it. And you'll get wonderful flowers. And, you know, it's not just petunias some of this stuff works for. You can do this with a lot of different things with some of these sprays. Roses, a lot of your vegetables, they also actually react to them just fine. But some of your flowers, you want to get the biggest, best blooms that you possibly can. Then you need to get something with high phosphorus and a little bit of calcium in there, potassium in there. So anyway, well, folks, holy smokes, that little bit of music in the background means we've only got a couple minutes left of the show. I certainly hope that you enjoyed the show, found it informative today. And don't forget that the farmers markets are back. The one at Kenai Spur and Corral, East Coral Road, is going on right now. Next Saturday, 10 o'clock at Kenai Peninsula College, is the Central Peninsula Garden Club plant sale. And don't forget, you can also go to the Central Peninsula Garden Club website and buy some merchandise. You can get t-shirts, hats, a coffee cup, a hoodie, a garden apron, and everything with a couple of the different logos of the garden club on that. Just go to sinpengardenclub.org and you'll find a merchandise link on there, and get in there and you can get you some CPGC merch. So give that a shot, and hopefully you will continue to support the garden club, and have good luck in your garden this year. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and again, like I said, I'm going to hopefully get that Facebook page set up with some recipes and some links to the things I talk about, and we'll go from there. So anyway, thanks so much for listening again today. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Hoping to get a few more guests on here. I'm going to hopefully get somebody and talk about trees in the future, fruit trees. So this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai and Soldotna. Thanks so much for listening. It's a lot of fun doing this. Thanks to Jenny. Thanks to all our gardeners out there. I hope you have a great year. Hope you have a wonderful garden. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks so much again.